Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Playoff watch has begun. 5 more weeks to go in the regular season, and then we get to play for keeps. We welcome you inside Patriots Playbook for a Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. Web radio at Patriots.com is the email address. That's how you reach us. Web radio at Patriots.com. You can also phone in your comment, concern, criticism, 508-543-7482. Again, it's 508-543-7482. I know that there's been a lot of talk over the last couple of days over the quote-unquote blueprint, been the buzzword over the last couple of days after the 31-28 win here at the stadium on Sunday night. But frankly, if that's a blueprint, my initial response to that is, well, it didn't work, did it? Because they still lost the game. Talking about the Eagles, of course, that is. Now, I think everybody realizes if you follow the NFL for any length of time, you know that Jim Johnson is an esteemed defensive coordinator, one of the better defensive minds certainly in the league. That the Eagles, they may not sometimes have the personnel, but they have the guys, they have the smarts, they have the coaches that can help keep them in games. And I think we saw that in the Super Bowl a few years ago, and I think we certainly saw that here on Sunday night. Now, whether or not that is an actual quote-unquote blueprint to beat the Patriots later this season, well, time is ultimately only going to tell that. I tend to think that, well, first of all, it would have to be completely and totally perfect for a team to copycat what the Eagles did, and then they're going to have to play the perfect game to win, to beat the New England Patriots here at the very least. Now, that may or may not happen, of course, but I can certainly see that if a team managed, and first of all, you have to understand that, you know, if somebody copies his blueprint, you know the Patriots are going to make adjustments, all right? They're going to do something different. And they adjusted, you know, in-game somewhat on Sunday night anyway. And we'll get to that here in a little bit. But fact of the matter is that, you know, they didn't win. The Patriots won the game. So if that's a blueprint, then you're going to have a team with at least equal personnel, if not a little bit better, that would have a shot at the Patriots, number one. And number two, things have to go perfectly. And number three, the Patriots are probably going to have to shoot themselves in the foot, which they really didn't do on Sunday night. Now, if you had combined what the Eagles did on Sunday with the Patriots turning the football over, you know, Brady throwing a couple of picks or, you know, a couple of fumbles being left on the ground or what have you, then I think you could see where a team could beat the Patriots. But again, it's got to be a perfect scenario. And as well as the Eagles played, and let me be the first to congratulate the Eagles on how they played. I know I'm not the first, but I certainly am going to jump in with that. They played magnificently, I thought. And I thought that throughout the game on Sunday night. It was almost a shame that they didn't win the game. I mean, if it was anybody other than the Patriots, you might have looked at this and say, wow, that's tough that they didn't win that. They played well enough, too. But the Patriots right now are a physical and more talented. They're a superior team. So to that end, I guess the search for perfection and the search for a blueprint will continue. Now, they did do a few things that I've been talking about. We've mentioned this on this program several times throughout the course of the season. How would you line up and beat the Pats? How would you beat the Pats? What would you do to slow the Patriots down and give yourself a chance to win? And I think you'd have to double up Randy Moss, which they did. You'd have to force the Patriots to go into the middle of the field, which they did. You'd have to get good pressure, consistent, solid pressure on Tom Brady, which they did. And I think you'd have to try in some form or fashion, man-on-man, such as it is, because you're already doubling up on Moss because you don't want him to beach deep. You're going to have to utilize man-press coverage defensively, and your defensive backs are going to have to muscle up and out-physical the Patriots' receivers. You basically have to beat them into the ground, kind of like what the Pats did to the Rams back in Super Bowl 36. And I think they actually did that somewhat, based on what I can recall. Because obviously I'm always following the ball, but you know, there are a few occasions where, you know, quite frankly, the Patriots have the key personnel where they can overcome that. Most notably, Wes Welker, who is just so incredibly low to the ground when he runs his routes that he's just damn near impossible to defend. You know, while we're talking about MVP candidates and how, you know, Tom Brady stacks up and how Randy Moss might stack up and, you know, whether or not Brett Favre, who's having a great year for Green Bay, could he compare, you know, favorably to Brady and such. Can we please just put a good word in here for a guy like Welker? And you know, I realize that the Patriots would probably go on and win without a guy like Welker, and that probably is your definition of MVP. Take a guy out of the mix, does that team still win? And you certainly understand that's where Brady gets his nod over anybody else. But Wes Welker is an all-pro. Wes Welker is a Pro Bowl player, and Wes Welker could be the most valuable to his team. Now, I tend to think of the MVP as being the most outstanding player. But if you really want to talk about a valuable player to his team, I've got to tell you, to me, Welker wins this thing hands down. 13 catches on Sunday night. Phenomenal. An absolute phenomenal. Tied his career high, or he set his career high in receptions and receiving yards. 13 catches for 149 yards. Think about that for a second. That's 6 weeks worth of catches for some guys in this league. Guys who are thought to be better than he is. His 13 catches, tying the second highest single game total in franchise history. Tied the highest single game total in team annals for a non-overtime game. His 13 catches trail only Troy Brown's record 16 in an overtime win over Kansas City back in 2002. Welker is there with two other Patriots with 13 catches in a game. Deion Branch had 13 at San Diego in 02, and Terry Glenn had 13 at Cleveland in 99. The 13 grabs tops his previous career best of 11, which he had at Dallas earlier this year. Bested his previous career high of receiving yards total, 138 at Miami earlier this year. He went for 149 on Sunday. He finishes the Philadelphia game now with 81 catches for 878 yards this season. That's the highest reception total by a Patriots player since Troy Brown had 97 in 2002. The 81 grabs as well the ninth highest single-season total in team history. And his 100-yard receiving game was his third of the season, the third of his career. Pretty easy to see here that Wes Welker's having a career year. And if he is not the kind of guy who can go over the middle and get those short ones, because they're taking the deep stuff away from Moss and, for the most part, Dante Stallworth, you know, the Patriots are in some trouble. I also thought the Pats did a great job in going to an open guy like Jabbar Gaffney earlier in the game, and he had plenty of opportunities. And, again, we always knew that these guys would get their chances to make plays when teams finally started figuring out we're not going to let Moss or we're not going to let Stallworth beat us. And the Eagles took that away. Give them credit. J.R. Reed's a backup back there, and he flat out took Moss out of the game. I mean, Moss still ended up, you know, with five catches, but Moss never caught the deep ball on them. And so it was up to Welker and, to a lesser extent, Kevin Faulk up the middle and Benjamin Watson to pick up the slack, which they did. So I wanted to open up by talking a little about Welker, because quite frankly, I think he has had a Pro Bowl season. I hope that he gets recognition. He deserves it. He deserves it, as far as I'm concerned, as much as Randy Moss, if not more so. I don't know that two Patriots receivers are going to make the Pro Bowl team. I'd say that would be highly unlikely. And my guess is, because he's, you know, Mr. Long Ball, just kind of like chicks digging the home run, Moss would get the nod. Even though, statistically speaking, Welker has had at least as good a year, as far as I'm concerned. Not quite as many yards, but certainly more catches. And he certainly means a heck of a lot to his team by being able to get open over the middle, because when teams are giving you that gap, you have to take it. And he was getting open. He's running great routes. And if you've never noticed it, you just simply have to watch him come off the line of scrimmage. And when he goes over the middle, how low he gets. Brady puts the ball where very few receivers can really go get it. Why? Because he can go get it, and because you just can't defend it. The only way you can defend that is by smack dab running into him and committing pass interference. And he's, because he's so low to the ground, he's just hard to defend. Not to mention hard to tackle, hard to bring down. I thought Wes Welker was a huge key to the game. Obviously, the two interceptions that Asante Samuel had, I know that there are probably many of you who think, pay him the money. I mean, let's just face it. Pay him the money. I don't know that that's going to happen. I think you probably realize that that may not happen as well. I guess things could change between now and the end of the season. But I don't know that the Patriots would have that kind of money slotted for his position. And especially because they've been relatively more healthy in the secondary this year. I think they feel like that's something that they can perhaps cultivate. And if Asante commands the big bucks, which apparently he's going to, based on what we've seen thus far, then they may be content to let him go make his money elsewhere. And I think that would be sort of that's always been, I think you realize, the modus operandi of the Patriots personnel department. You know, they feel like, you know, the value for the position is worth X. They stick to that value. And if the player commands more than that value for that particular position, it's kind of like, no offense, we're going to let you go get your money elsewhere. And frankly, I don't know how you or me or anybody else could have a beef with that. If it's worked to this point so far, if potentially now we're looking at a fourth Super Bowl championship in a 7-year period, how can you argue with the system that they have in place? So I don't want you to get all bent out of shape if they decide not to pay Asante Samuel. Don't. Because it's exactly how this team operates. In fact, you want a real upset? The real upset here would be if the Patriots decide to sign him and keep him. And, of course, I think you realize that that's only going to happen if somehow, some way, he takes a hometown discount. And, frankly, I don't know why he would. If the Patriots win, he'll have a couple of rings on his fingers. You know, he's making a good salary, obviously, this year as a franchise player. But, you know, guys only get to free agency, basically, if they're lucky once, really. And he should, if someone's going to throw money at him, he should take it. You would, I would, we all would. He's already got a couple of rings, so why not go take the money and try to win for somebody else? I'm sorry, I think Asante Samuel's gone. I don't think he'll be around after this year. So let's enjoy him while we have him for the last 5 weeks here, plus the postseason. Because he is going to go down as a player who made a lot of big plays for this franchise and had a huge hand in potentially winning some Super Bowls here. And like Ty Law, he's gone on and you know, made some money somewhere else. And he's still got his prime ahead of him, perhaps. Or at least certainly some healthy years ahead of him, unlike Ty, to that extent. And the Patriots will go back into the draft, or they'll go find, you know, free agents, or they'll cultivate what they already have on the roster, and they'll bring other guys up, and they'll let them have they'll let them go. I got to admit, I was a little disappointed with Eddie Jackson's coverage on Sunday night, but you know, he did get burnt on the one touchdown up the middle that the Eagles scored. And you know, I'm not gonna judge a player by, you know, one game, because that's, I think, the most extended action that he's seen thus far this year. But you know, at least the earlier return wasn't exactly a positive one. So these are all thoughts that, you know, that will certainly be going through the ringer over the course of the next few weeks. But you know, Samuel with his two picks, let's see, he has a team leading 6 on the season now. He has 22 interceptions for his career. The 22 interceptions in a Patriots uniform put him 10th. On the all-time Patriots list, moving ahead of Donnie Webb. The Eagles game was the 4th game of his career in which he had multiple picks. But 6 this year on the heels of the 10 that he had last year, and he's still got 5 more games to play. So he's erased any doubt about putting back-to-back years together. I think that was a large question and probably a large reason why he was not signed in the offseason and why there was a potential, you know, season-long holdout, at least, you know, through 10 weeks, you know, which he'd be just now coming back. But that didn't happen because they franchised him. He accepted it, and he's going to apparently hit some incentives in his contract, which will allow him to be a free agent and the Patriots to not franchise him again, even though they certainly had the right to do that. So that's where Samuel is concerned. I think he's put together, even if he doesn't have another pick this year, I think we've seen that he is a quality corner. You can probably count on one hand the number of guys in the NFL who conceivably are better than he is at his position. He anticipates as well as any corner. If his coverage isn't, you know, locked down coverage, his anticipation is what gets him by and what allows him to excel. His ability to read a quarterback and his ability to read a receiver's route is what has enabled him to be as successful as he has been. I mean, the first pass by Feely that he picked off for the touchdown, which kind of set the tone, and probably in retrospect here, was the worst thing that could have happened to the Patriots on Sunday night. But his ability to do that was phenomenal. And, you know, A.J. Feely obviously threw a rotten pass, you know, on your heels, crossed the field like he did, I mean, to the sideline. I mean, that's just stupidity, really. But fact is, Samuel read it, broke on it, made the play. And he did it late in the game as well when the pass was overthrown in the end zone, and then it ended up being the game-saving play of the ball game because the Eagles were certainly in field goal range right then, and they were going for potential, you know, go-ahead score. So Welker and Samuel certainly come to mind. I know there have been a lot of emails. We'll try to share some of those with you. We'll try not to repeat some of the emails that were in here earlier, but we'll pick and choose a few. In the meantime, I do want to hear from you. If you haven't had your chance to get your thoughts in on Sunday's game, or if you sent an email earlier to the PFW guys and they didn't get a chance to get to it, I'm going to ask you to resend, if you would not mind, please, webradio@patriots.com. That way I'll know it didn't get read. So if you're listening and you want to know if your email or your question is going to get answered, resend it. webradio@patriots.com, and we'll do that. Brian Lowe is going to join us, of course, from Patriots Today in the 3 o'clock hour of the program, and then later in the program we'll also hear from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick, and so that's what we have on the agenda for you today. But right now this is really about you, your thoughts on Sunday, whether or not now you believe the Patriots to be vulnerable at all. How vulnerable are they? Is there a chink in the armor? Is this the blueprint that the media has been talking about? I've kind of already given you my thoughts. I really want to hear your opinions today. That's what it's all about today. I also want to touch just briefly on the whole sad, unbelievably shocking story that Sean Taylor's death has brought about in the NFL world today, because, quite frankly, the whole thing is just, not only is it shocking by nature, there's a little bit of a cynic in me. And please, first of all, let me say that, yes, my prayers and my thoughts go out to the Redskins and to Taylor and his young son and his fiance and his family, first and foremost, because anybody who has their life taken, and apparently in an armed robbery situation such as this was, somebody breaking and entering and shooting him, deserves the full extent of the law. And obviously, to have a 24-year-old in the prime of his athletic life be cut short like that is just an unbelievable tragedy. And I can't imagine the sorrow that his family's going through. But I'm going to mention something here that I'm sure that many of you who know of Sean Taylor and know of some of the problems that he has had in his first few years in the NFL. And if you haven't consciously thought about it because you feel like maybe lightning's going to strike you dead, or, you know, maybe that's not the appropriate thing to think of because in a time of sorrow and mourning, which really where the attention should be, but my first initial reaction, I'm going to be totally honest with you here, okay? And this is with no disrespect to Sean, no disrespect to anybody, but my first reaction was, well, didn't he kind of hang around thugs to begin with? That was my first honest reaction. Whether it's right or wrong, it's honest. And I know that there was a story that's come out since his shooting yesterday, that about a week to 10 days ago, there was another breaking and entering into his home. And I've got to find the story here, so forgive me. Some of you may already know this as well. But there was another breaking and entering into his home, and somebody left a knife. And so I'm guessing that that was, you know, obviously some kind of a message that was being sent. The shooting, yes, here's what it is. Last week there was a break-in. Police said someone pried open a front window in his home, rifled through the drawers, and left a kitchen knife on a bed. Well, I mean, you know, that's what happens, I guess, if you run around in those circles. And apparently he did. You know, he did have, you know, a gun, and there were some gun charges earlier in his career. He fired his agent right after he was drafted. He skipped the mandatory rookie symposium, which gave him a $25,000 fine before he ever, you know, put on a uniform in this league. He was charged with drunken driving. He's been fined for late hits, for uniform violations. He spit in the face of an opponent. He brandished a gun at a man after a fight over, you know, some stolen, what was it, ATVs, I think it was. You know, I mean, let's face it, you know, you surround yourself with trouble, trouble's going to follow you wherever you go. And I hate to say it, but quite frankly, it kind of seems like that's where this is coming from. It does not excuse it. It's still an incredibly devastating loss, you know, for his family and for his teammates and for the Redskins. But isn't there a little something in you that says, this didn't have to happen? I'm, you know, okay, maybe I'm being cold and callous. I don't think so. I think this is why the NFL has the policies that they have against players and their conduct. This is why they come down hard on people. And, yes, make fun of the NFL for being the no-fun league, for striking, you know, players down and fining them for, you know, celebrations and uniform violations, the stupid things that are out there. But I think, you know, if you kind of look at this from the league point of view now, and I'm not trying to compare the two, but I'm just saying, you know, if you come down on one, you got to come down on all. And I think that this is part of the problem here. This is why, you know, the NFL realizes that it's a marketing machine. You know, they need positive publicity. And anytime something like this happens, it's just an out-and-out tragedy. But they're trying to help keep their players from getting into the kind of problems that apparently Sean Taylor was involved with. And the sad part about all of this is, the really sad part, is that those who are closer to him, his teammates, some team officials, they basically said that in the last year and a half since, you know, he's had a child, his daughter, he'd matured. That he was showing up on time, he was doing things the right way, he was keeping his nose, for the most part, out of trouble. That's the sad part. He learned maturity, but it wasn't enough to save him. And that's where I really feel sad and sorrowful. I am all for people getting a second chance. I am all for people who, you know, admit their mistakes and they want to be forgiven. I'm all for giving them another opportunity to turn their lives around. You have to. We must. As humans, we have the ability to do that. Unlike animals, we can reason. At least most of us can. And so that's where I'm saddest today about Sean Taylor, because here's a young man who was getting that second chance, who was trying to turn it around, who was trying to own up to his responsibilities and trying to be a good father, you know, he was engaged to be married, trying to do the best by his teammates. He was rehabbing a knee injury at you know, he'd missed the last couple of weeks with the Redskins, and then this has to happen. I'd like your thoughts on the tragedy of Sean Taylor as well. If you haven't had a forum in which to express your thoughts and your opinions, even though it's a different team, the Redskins were certainly on the Patriots' schedule this year, as we all know and we've talked about. And, of course, this is an issue that affects us all. I mean, it does. It affects us all, not only as football fans, but affects us all as human beings. I mean, this could happen, breaking and entering, and this could happen to anybody. And I guess that's the scariest part of all. So if you have not had a chance to opine about this tragic incident, you may do so. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address again, and the telephone number 508-543-7482. I also believe that where the Philadelphia Eagles may have studied their film very well, looked at their videotape very well, decided, okay, we're not going to let X beat us, Y is going to have to beat us, which is, in effect, what happened pretty much on Sunday night. I'm not sure the teams come right out and blatantly copy the kind of scheme that Jim Johnson and the Eagles used against the Patriots. Fact is, you've got to have the personnel groupings that are similar, I think, in order to effectuate that kind of play. And again, they didn't do anything that we really haven't already talked about this year. So I guess what I'm going to ask you to do as well today via email is sort of an email question of the day, in addition to the aforementioned topics already, have you noticed something with this Patriots football team that you would do differently in an effort to try to slow them down or stop them? Is there something that somebody has missed somewhere? I'll tell you what I would do, and as hard as it would be to do, you're going to have to figure out a way. You're going to have somebody, you know, you're going to have to put double coverage on Randy Moss, but you have to figure out a way to shadow Wes Welker. You have to assign somebody to him. Kind of like, you know, you sign, you know, a linebacker per se against a stud running back, or maybe a quarterback, you know, that has some running ability like a Vince Young, or in the past like a Michael Vick. You know, you'd shadow him with a linebacker and just not let him go. And anytime he, you know, gets across the line of scrimmage, you make him pay, that kind of thing. You're going to have to find somebody that's able to keep up with Wes Welker. I don't know that that's even physically possible. But, you know, it's pretty easy to see that you might have shut Moss down, but you let Walker beat you. I mean, Welker beat you. Frankly, I don't, you know, can you take that a step further and try to shut both of those guys down? Can you come up with anything else? Kind of an interesting question, isn't it? Webradio@patriots.com. All right, there you go. I've got a couple of email topics for you to get to. Going to sort through some of these emails. We're going to get to some of your questions, your comments, your concerns as well here on a Tuesday. Patriots, of course, will not play until next Monday. They'll go back onto the road and take on the Baltimore Ravens on Monday. And so we'll be dealing with the Ravens stuff primarily tomorrow and Thursday here on the program. And then we're back to another short work week next week because of Monday Night Football. But, you know, it'll be the fourth night game in a row now that we're going to play? Three in a row, right? Three in a row. It seems like every game has been a night game in the last month or so. And it's kind of like, man, when are we going to get a good old normal 1 o'clock game? And it's still not going to happen the next week after that because the Pittsburgh game has been moved to 4:15 in the afternoon. So I'm like, you know, I guess that's the price of success, huh? Webradio@patriots.com. We'll get some emails, your phone calls, much more coming up after this.
He's been a three-time champion, two-time Super Bowl MVP, and kicked off 2007 on a record pace.
Three touchdown passes in the first half.
Now Tom Brady has signed official Patriots mini replica helmets, and you can get one free. Exclusively from the New England Patriots, this authentic mini helmet comes complete with chin strap, face mask, and Tom Brady's autograph. Perfect for every Patriots fan. To take advantage of this incredible one-of-a-kind offer, all you need to do is make qualifying transactions on your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card. Plus, with your card, you'll earn Patriots Extra Points redeemable for once-in-a-lifetime Patriots experiences, pregame field passes, memorabilia, merchandise, tickets, and much more. Don't wait. Apply at PatriotsExtraPoints.com or call 1-800-NFL-9929 to get your Bank of America Patriots Extra Points Visa card and a free official mini replica helmet autographed by Tom Brady. Patriots Extra Points, because fans want contact too. Autographed mini helmet limited to those making a qualifying purchase. See details at PatriotsExtraPoints.com.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything. Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check.
That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go Pats! Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Patriots Playbook rolling on for Tuesday here. Webradio at Patriots.com. 25 minutes. Brian Lowe from Patriots Today will join us here in studio. Also take your questions and your emails. And then Patriots head coach Bill Belichick wrapping it up on a Tuesday as well here as we recap the 31-28 win over the Philadelphia Eagles from Sunday night here at Gillette. And we begin to look ahead now to the Monday night encounter at Baltimore. What do they call it? M&T Bank Stadium? What the heck? MB&T? What the heck is the name of that bank now? I don't know. I can't keep up with all of it. But that's where they play in Baltimore, and that's what we'll be doing on Monday night, another Monday night football game. We've got some nighttime stuff. A couple of other tidbits, some notes from the game over the Eagles on Sunday. It was the 26th career fourth-quarter comeback by Tom Brady. 26th time in his career he's led the Patriots to win after a fourth-quarter deficit or tie, the 20th time in the regular season, six times in the playoffs overall. Randy Moss for the game had a catch in the second quarter to pass Andre Rison with his 744th career reception. That moves him into 25th place all-time in NFL history in the all-time receptions list. Well, it just shows you what Jerry Rice really did, huh? He had about double what Randy Moss has right now. Tom Brady as well passed the 25,000-yard milestone for his career. He reached that mark on his final completion of the night, which was a 16-yarder to Jabbar Gaffney in the fourth quarter. So he now has 25,003 passing yards in his 107-game regular season NFL career. And so now he is a member of the 25,000-yard club with Drew Bledsoe and Steve Grogan. In Patriots franchise history, Brady threw for 380 yards in the game, his second highest yardage total of the season, third highest of his career, 54 pass attempts, 34 completions, 54 passes, 54 attempts, his highest total since tying his career high with 55 against Denver in September of 06. bring you up to date on some of those things. James Sanders had his first pick of the year to ice the game with 11 seconds left. Asante Samuel, as we told you earlier, with two picks, now has six for the year, 22 for his career. And the interception return of a touchdown on the third play of the game, second play of the game, actually, offensive play of the game for the Eagles, was his third career regular season interception return for a touchdown. Samuel also, here's a little bit of a, I think this one you can probably amaze your friends with if you like to. He's now the 20th different Patriot player to score a touchdown this season. 20 different guys have scored. Now, the NFL record for most players scoring a touchdown in a single season is 21. That's been done by two different teams, the 2000 Denver Broncos and the 1987 Los Angeles Rams. Both had 21 players score touchdowns. The Patriots are only one away from matching that mark. And here's the list of Patriots who have scored. Moss, Welker, Watson, Morris, Stallworth, Brady, Kyle Brady and Tom Brady, Eckel, Hobbs, Vrabel, Andrews, Castle, Colvin, Evans, Falk, Gaffney, Gay, Maroney, Thomas, Samuel. There you go. Good list. 20 different players. Can you think of who might be 21? I think that'd be another good question to kind of throw out there today. They have a shot at somebody else on this team? I mean, 20 players, that's almost half of the active roster. They scored a touchdown. Maybe a fumble into the end zone and we let one of the offensive linemen fall on it, huh? That'd be 21. Or you throw it to Junior Seau since he likes to play blocking back on short yardage situations. Why not? Seven returns overall for touchdowns this year for the Patriots. And that ties for the highest total since 1961 by this franchise. Seven return touchdowns. Second highest in team history. And the trails the eight return touchdowns that the team had in 1961. They had seven touchdowns via returns in 01 and in 03. And now they have it again in 07. So I think that shows you part of the reason, you know, a lot of the criticism on this team has been to, you know, been for toward running up the score and whatnot. But frankly, it just shows you right there that that's a large reason why the score has been as high as it has been in a lot of games. They're getting returns for touchdowns. I mean, seven in 11 games, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. What else do we have that we had written down from the game? You had Lawrence Maroney on his second rushing touchdown. Jabbar Gaffney, his second receiving touchdown. Heath Evans scored his second touchdown of the season, third of his career. Let's see what else. Brady, he's 28-5 now in games decided by 6 points or less. He's 33-2 on artificial turf, 26-4. Against NFC teams. You know the last NFC team to beat the Patriots? Do you remember? See if you know. Send me a note. See if you know. Welker pulled in a 42-yarder in the third quarter. That was the longest of the season, the second longest reception of his career. His longest reception of his career, a 47-yarder playing from Miami against the Patriots 2 years ago. Probably had a lot to do with why the Patriots went out and got him in the offseason, huh? Gaffney caught a 32-yarder from Brady in the first quarter. That's the longest of the season for him and the second longest since joining the Patriots. He caught a 33-yarder last year right after he joined the team against the Jets. So just some notes that we wanted to pass on to you in retrospect of the game on Sunday night. Anything else come to your mind? You are welcome to fire it off, webradio@patriots.com. All right, let's see if we can get to a couple of emails here. And again, forgive me if some of these are repeats, but I've been told that the ones that I have in my particular inbox now have not been utilized. So that's what we're going with here. Guys, from Mark, I'm happy the Patriots won, but I will say the Patriots went in the game thinking the Eagles were going to be an easy team to beat with all this talk about the Pats being the best team in history. They are not yet. I do not see 16-0 yet. I don't even see a Super Bowl ring yet. Patriots got exposed last night for the Ravens. The Ravens have one of the best defenses, and the Patriots must step up. In their defense, Brady's lucky he was not knocked out with that hit he took and went hard on his back. And what is wrong with Maroney? Wish the Patriots would get another running back. We need a running game. Well, Mark, we kind of take this apart, number one. By saying that you don't see 16-0 yet or a Super Bowl ring, well, you're just being pragmatic. And I think that's probably technically correct, although I think a lot of people would choose to disagree with you at this stage of the game. The Ravens still do have, yes, a good defense, but the Ravens also have been torched of late. I mean, Cleveland rang up 33 on them a couple of weeks ago. San Diego has had their way with them as well. So I think the Ravens are not quite the defensive team right now that maybe they were at the beginning of this season. Do the Patriots have to step up? Yes. But I don't think that this, right now I think the Ravens' defense compares favorably to some of the others the Patriots have seen, if they're even that good, based on what we've seen other teams do against them. As far as Maroney, I've said all along, I don't think he's a durable back. And I don't know if it's just because, you know, the Patriots are bringing him along slowly, or, you know, the guys are in the locker room are kidding by, you know, filling his locker full of diapers because they feel like, you know, sometimes, you know, people say that they're babying him. I think he's taking it all in stride. But quite frankly, I do have some legitimate concerns over his durability. And if the Patriots are fortunate enough to get one of those top picks, I'd love to see them go after a guy like Darren McFadden from Arkansas. Because after what I saw him do against LSU, I'm sold. I'm sold on him. I don't know that the Patriots would do that, number one, because I think you realize that would be going against everything they've really done, especially with a high draft pick. Plus, I know because of the advancing age of some of the linebackers, I could certainly see them going a different route. So, but you never know. I share your concern, Mark. Let's see what else we have here. Let's go with, here's a different Mark. First, let me say I'm happy the Pats pulled it out Sunday. He's from Melbourne, Florida. Second, what are your thoughts of the Eagles creating the blueprint? My thoughts are that the Pats defense was in a trap game mentality. I believe they took Feely likely and ended up getting burned. Most of the time the coverage was there, but just a half step away. Credit to Feely, also because he played out of his mind. I also thought that the Pats made another stop in the first half to allow it to become a two-score game. That game would have been much more comfortable. Absolutely, on that last point. You know, I think the game plan was to not put the pressure as much on A.J. Feely and not apply that pressure to him specifically and allow him the chance to beat himself and not let the Eagles receivers, who are certainly capable, not let them beat them. And I think that's what it was. Because I think one of the things that we talked about was during the course of the game, how the Patriots were not able to get Feely at all, get to him in terms of pressure. And I think that was actually part of the game plan. And ultimately, Feely did end up beating himself by, you know, with a couple of bad passes that were ultimately picked off by Asante Samuel in particular. And so I guess you can say that it worked out to an extent. But the fact is it worked out. So A.J. Feely played an outstanding game. I'm a little shaky with the game plan, but I understand why they did what they did. Ben in Santa Barbara, he says two thoughts. Pay Samuel, period. Pay him, end of story. Don't think that's going to happen. Let's see. Oh, Jerry in Southeastern Mass. Noticed during the Patriots-Eagle game on Sunday, nearly every time the Pats had the ball at the line of scrimmage, shots, close-ups, Brady directing. Yeah, I know that the PFW guys were talking about that as I came into the studio tonight. I know that was a big topic of conversation on local sports radio. Frankly, I don't know. It was a parabolic mic on the sideline that was picking up the noise, and it happened to be directed right at Tom. And because the crowd is much less noisy during the course of the game, you're going to be able to hear him as opposed to being able to hear a guy like Feely when the crowd is going nuts. And I really don't think it was anything more than that. I don't really think you can think of a conspiracy or out to get the Patriots or reveal their signals or their audibles or what have you. I just think that was part of I think that's part of the byproduct of having those microphones out on the field. I don't think it's really anything else other than that, to be honest with you. Dan says, I think another 60-minute game is the best thing that could have happened. I've been a little skeptical about the backfield since they haven't really been tested that much yet. Why were there such open holes with six DBs on the field at times? Also, what are the rules about defending receivers? I mean, you can jam them within 5 yards, but can you practically rip off a player's jersey like Shepard did to Moss? Well, first of all, six DBs on the field at times, yes, they were open holes because that was the coverage they were playing. They were purposely playing soft. And we made that comment several times in the press box. They're playing really soft. They're not pressing. They don't want to get beat deep. They want to keep the receivers in front of them. They want to try to clog the middle of the field with bodies. And ultimately, Feely did throw three interceptions. Ended up costing them. I thought they played a little too soft for my liking, but I think that was part of the design of the game plan. I think they were following orders, in other words. You can jam them within 5 yards, but as far as ripping off a player's jersey, well, no. And then obviously the offensive interference call against Moss in the end zone was cheap, and I don't think that was pass interference by the letter of the law, especially after you look at it several times on replay. But the fact is that he's now a marked man. The Eagles and other teams have specifically gone to officials on the sideline and says, you've got to look out for Moss. And so now the officials are completely and totally tuned in to Randy. So he is not going to get the benefit of the doubt at all on any of those calls, and he's going to have to adjust. Because as soon as they see those arms extend, they're going to call it, whether there was contact made on the play or not. And, of course, the sad part about it is that, you know, the back judge blew the call because there was no contact with the defensive back. Not that we could tell. It was a silly call. It was an anticipation call. It's kind of like anticipating a foul in basketball. You know, when a guy goes over the top and gets a clean block. But you anticipate that there's a foul because, well, there must have been. How else can a guy make an athletic play like that? And so the fault is on the official. You know, the officials are not perfect. I think we all realize that. I wish some of them realized it. And I wish some of them could say, you know, hey, I'm sorry I blew that call. Pick up the flag and play on. Or do over. You know, geez, we all had do-overs as kids. Why can't we have do-overs in real life? We had do-overs all the time. We give people second chances all the time. Okay, here we go. This one comes from Sawyer from Waterloo, Iowa, who says, hopefully this game will wake up some of the guys. I thought that both the offensive and defensive lines were completely dominated by the Eagles. I'm not sure how Moss is double-covered, and yet it seemed like they were rushing 11 guys. Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't their offensive line let McNabb get killed? Sorry, hit a lot. They gave Feely plenty of time to throw the interceptions. Our front four never did get any pressure. Their lack of pressure let Hobbs get beat on every play. Well, again, one hand kind of washes the other. They're playing soft, and yet they're not really out-rushing A.J. Feely. So in that regard, you know, you would think the defensive backs would do a better job. And frankly, no, I don't think that a guy like Ellis Hobbs did a very good job on Sunday night. Were they supposed to play off the receiver? Yes. But, you know, when you're not getting pressure up front and you're allowing a guy to have that kind of, I mean, I don't think you can do both and do both successfully, especially if you have a quarterback who's making plays. Now, obviously, the Patriots thought that A.J. Feely would not be able to make the plays that he made on Sunday. And he did. And the Patriots are very lucky to get away with that. I think you and I and anybody else who cares can only hope that they don't let that same mistake happen again. That's really what it kind of boils down to. Diane in Bridgeport, Connecticut says, given the needs of the Patriots and the Dolphins, what do you think of offering a first-round pick for Jason Taylor? To me, it seems like everyone wins. Well, maybe, Diane, but, you know, first of all, the Dolphins aren't going to do that because it's within the division. I don't ever see a team within the division doing something like that. Let a player go if he can come back to haunt them. Okay, that's the first thing. I mean, you'd really have to be, I think, kind of stupid to do that. Number two, I'm not so sure the Patriots want to make that. I mean, if Jason Taylor, is he worth a first rounder? He might be. But I think he's having a subpar year compared to other years this year. Maybe that has something to do with the fact he's on an 0-11 team. Although, you know, he and the defense seemed to play pretty well last night on that slop of a field in Pittsburgh. But I don't know that you want to give up a first-round draft pick for a guy that you might have for a couple of years. Salt in Orlando says, I was shocked to hear about Sean Taylor, but my question is, why was he in Miami? They played and lost in Tampa. Well, he's not with the team right now, Salt. He'd been injured, so he's actually had been home rehabbing. And that's why he was not with the team. Let's see. What else do we have that we can go with? Andy in Sioux City, Iowa. I hope they have to fight hard in a couple more games yet this year. If Colvin can't go this week, how do the Pats line up on defense? Is there any way Samuel gets signed, or should we be enjoying watching him in a Pats uniform for the last year? Well, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, Andy, yes, I think that you should enjoy watching him for five more games plus the playoffs, because I personally don't see any way that they re-sign him. I again think the Patriots assign a value to the particular position. I think they feel like there's no way they're going to be able to pay Asante and his agent what he feels he's worth in this particular instance. And so in that regard, they'll probably encourage him to go get his money unless he wants to stay and play for the hometown discount. And why should he? Because if the Patriots win the Super Bowl, there's no real reason to. He might, but I doubt it. And I think you should be enjoying his last 5, 6, 7, 8 games tops in a Patriots uniform, because I think he's going to go elsewhere. As far as Colvin is concerned, well, if he doesn't go, and we won't begin to know more, obviously, until Wednesday when the first injury report goes out with the injured foot, my guess is that they might move Adalis Thomas to the outside and move both Sale and Bruschi to the inside. That would be the first guess. They also might allow a guy like Pierre Woods to play on the outside as well and to see more playing time. If not Eric Alexander, but Pierre Woods is more of an end guy anyway. So that would be the first guess. If he doesn't go, they'd probably put both Bruschi and Sale in the middle and then allow Thomas to move to the outside. Hope that answers your question. Matt and Quincy, sent you an email last week saying that I think the league should have a standard field turf in every stadium in the league. You guys gave me the verbal equivalent of a blank stare. You must be talking about the PFW guys, Matt. I wonder what you think after watching that tractor pull in Pittsburgh last night. A decent playing surface just makes for a better game. Mud wrestling is not my idea of good football. Well, you know, in Pittsburgh, they had played, what, high school championship games there, and then they had the Pittsburgh Panthers play there on Saturday, and then the game last night. I mean, you're right, that is a joke. That's the exact same thing Patriots got threatened with thousands of dollars in fines for by the NFL if they didn't do something to address the field situation. And guess what? Same thing's going to happen to the Steelers. Same thing is going to happen to the Steelers. Now, I don't know if the Steelers have the wherewithal to be able to pull a change off in the middle of the year, because you remember the Patriots had a nice long, like an 18-day window in order to be able to do that. So the Steelers may have to live with what they have this year. But you're right. You're absolutely right. Somebody's got to say something, because if I was the Dolphins, I certainly would be plenty upset about it. That may have been my last best opportunity, save for this week against the Jets, to actually get a win this year. Bob in Canada, Tom Brady essentially suggested one of the main reasons he does not sustain long-term injuries is that he is bony, implying those who are more muscularly developed are more prone to injury, and that he essentially relaxes and goes with the hit rather than trying to fight it, as running backs sometimes do, and that's like Gumby. My question is to the experts. Is Tom just being facetious about his claim about bony people and relaxing when you're hit, or is he accurate about one of the main reasons he started 119 straight games, including playoffs? And for the uninitiated, who or what is Gumby? Oh, this is good. Well, Bob, obviously you're showing your age. Because if you were a child of the 1960s and 70s, you have to remember Gumby and Pokey. It was a claymation animated cartoon. And Gumby was a little, you know, a claymation character who could bend and form and mutate into many different shapes. He was like decades ahead of himself. And his compatriot, his pal, was a horse named Pokey, and it was Gumby and Pokey. And I used to watch Gumby and Pokey cartoons all the time, especially on Sundays after church. I don't know why that is, but they always seem to be on Sunday morning. So that's who Gumby is, and Gumby could bend any which way. In fact, do they still make Gumbies in toy stores? They did as of a few years ago, because I remember seeing them. But he was sort of an asexual, you know, you can't tell whether he's male or female. In fact, we used to always kid that Gumby's a girl because he had a high-pitched voice. Talk like this. And you could bend him any way you wanted to. Bend him in a circle, and he, like I said, on the animated cartoon, on the claymation cartoon, he could take the shape of just about anything. Kind of like you see aliens do nowadays in movies and other animated features. So that's who Gumby is. I wonder about that myself, because when I heard his post-game comments, I'm thinking, you know, maybe he actually knows how to take a hit. When he knows it's coming, he just relaxes and takes it. I don't think he's being critical of guys who have muscles more so than he does. I mean, Tom's not, you know, without muscle himself. He just, you know, considers himself to be more of a bony type of player. And because, you know, there's less muscle that gets hit, that's less tissue that can get damaged. I don't know. Makes sense to me. I don't know about you, but it makes sense to me. Sam from Denmark says, what a game. Philly was actually in position to win had Feely not thrown that second pick. But I suppose the interception that evens up with the silly pass interference call on Moss. That's true. Do you reckon Donovan McNabb would have put up 28 points in the Pats? Feely was pretty accurate on those throws over the middle, and I reckon McNabb could have thrown behind the receivers a lot on those plays. Yeah, I actually thought about that during the game. I'm thinking, you know what? The silly part about all this is, the sad part about it all is that if McNabb had played, I'm not so sure they have the game that they have that A.J. Feely had. He says, would you do this deal? Second-round pick for D'Angelo Hall. I think he's truly an idiot, but he does have some talent. Maybe BB can get him on track. When the season's over, I can only assume that three-time world champ all-pro cornerback Asante Samuel will get his $30 million up front he's earned. Brady needs 330 yards a game over the remaining 5 weeks to break Marino's single-season record for passing yards. How do you like the chances? It looks tough, but if he dumps 500 on Mangino's Jets in week 15, it might be possible. Well, you know, that's actually one record that looks to be somewhat gettable that we haven't even talked about yet on this show this year. 330 yards a game over the last 5 weeks to do it. I'd say you're right. He probably comes close. He's got 39 touchdowns, so he needs 10 more touchdowns, 11 more touchdowns to break Manning's record to get to 50. So he basically has to average two per week, then plus one over the last 5 weeks to get that record. So that looks to be a possibility, although they did hold him to just one touchdown pass on Sunday night, snapping his streak of 10 straight games with three-plus TD passes, three or more for a particular game. Looking at the defenses, has he got a shot? Sure. Chances, I'd say 40-60, 30-70. Reason being, you know, as the season gets colder, and because we're playing three games in December here in Gillette, I would think that there would be a tendency to at least try to put the ball on the ground and try to run more time off of the clock, especially if you've got a big lead. I don't know if they will or not, but I think that there certainly could be an effort to get to that point. So I'd say a little less than 50-50 right now, but, yeah, I'd say that there's a possibility for it. It's actually a good question. Anthony says, in my opinion, Moss had chances to have a big game despite the Eagles' coverage. The Eagles did a good job, but Moss dropped a couple, specifically the long one down the sideline. Moss's drops were uncharacteristic. He also had a touchdown call back for pass interference, which seemed to be ticky-tacky, although I admittedly didn't get the best angles on NBC's broadcast. Agreed. You know, he had a couple of drops. The over-the-shoulder one on the one long pass that he was remotely open on, that was a tough catch. He had to look over one shoulder and then looked over the other the last second the ball was in his hands. You know, he's been such an unworldly, otherworldly player for the most part this year. You're right. The muffs that he had were somewhat uncharacteristic for him, but I think it shows that, number one, you know, you have to give some credit to the Eagles' double coverage because they obviously were in his head a little bit. Number two, the guy's human. You know, he's not going to be able to make the big plays all the time. But the fact is that, you know, he will come up with it a lot of the time. That's part of it. All right, let's see what else we have. From Andrew, longtime Pats fan, addicted listener, he says, in Orange City, Florida. Says, I've got a 12-question true-false quiz about the meaning of the recent game. Oh, boy, 12 questions? Tell you what, Andrew, we'll save that for a time when things are a little slower. John in Grand Junction, Colorado, but thanks for sending it anyway. John in Grand Junction, Colorado, is today decision day for Troy Brown. Any word or opinion on what is going to happen with him? Activate or IR? And we've actually had two or three questions asking if we know anything about Troy Brown and the decision made today. And I think it's an appropriate question to ask. And since we are now into the second hour of our program, we welcome in Brian Lowe from Patriots Today.
How you doing, John?
And I'll ask you the same thing. Have you heard or seen anything yet?
Waiting with bated breath. I mean, haven't seen anything. I don't think, you know, they haven't officially determined anything. And it is today, and I've seen the 4 o'clock hour.
Right.
But I don't know. I'd be stunned if they cut him. I mean, there's really three options. He's activated to the 53-man roster, mm-hmm. he's placed on injured reserve, or he's released. I can't imagine them releasing Troy Brown in the middle of the season. I, you know, I don't know if he may have played his last game for the Patriots. I just don't see them releasing him. I think, you know, if they put him on IR and they've determined, you know what, he's probably not, you know, playing with us next year, then at some point in the offseason they do, you know, they announce he's not coming back. I think it's either activated or IR. I'm not breaking any ground there by saying that. And then the question is, you know, if he goes on IR, you know, what does that mean for him and his future? If he's activated to the 53-man roster, who is released on put on IR or put on IR? So, you know, waiting on it. Hard to say. You know, he was at the game on Sunday on the sidelines pregame, which, you know, if a guy is, you know, is on his last few hours with the team, I don't think he'd be on the sidelines there. You know, he's been spotted every now and then in the locker room, coming to and from the weight room or all that. I mean, he's around. You know, he's been practicing for 3 weeks, and that's where this three-week window ends today of being allowed to practice before you have to make a decision. And in the small amounts that we see of him at practice, it doesn't, you know, you don't get the sense that there's anything wrong with him. So I don't know. I don't know what to think. I mean, by the end of the day, we'll find out. But it's an interesting one because I don't think they would have – I mean, they have six wide receivers on the roster right now. I don't see them going to seven. I mean, that's a lot for that position.
Yeah, and I guess then the follow-up to that would be if they decide to activate him and put him on the roster, who goes?
I would think that it has something to do with Chad Jackson maybe going on IR. Now, you know, as we know with him, he was also on PUP. He's played in one game.
Right.
He's healthy. He, you know, technically, he wasn't on the injury report going into this most recent game, and he was technically a healthy scratch. So that's the only that's the only wrinkle there. If he goes on IR, well, what's his injury? How did he get hurt? You know, that's where you come up with a question there. I don't see them releasing Chad Jackson. Yeah. And then if you keep going on that list of wide receivers, Kelly Washington.
Although he had a couple of great special teams plays.
I don't see that happening. Now, you know, the only other possibility is there's a guy who is an IR candidate. You know, It would be hard. You know, there are other guys on the roster, maybe, you know, an Eddie Jackson or a Rashad Baker, guys at other positions who you would think are on the roster bubble. But, again, if you're talking about a defensive back, we saw a few different defensive backs go out of the game on Sunday, and they were hurting there. You know, they've got some issues there. You know, at one point I heard, hey, could Eugene Wilson be a guy who's on his, you know, the clock is ticking on him and his career with the Patriots. I mean, he technically was a healthy scratch. I mean, Eugene Wilson was a healthy scratch on Sunday. You know, what does that mean? You know, so it's almost like one of these training camp, you know, roster deadline days where you're like, well, you know, this guy could go, but then they'd have so many guys at this position and not enough at another position. It's one of those. And, you know, there's a few different things, you know, to look at. And I saw a report that Chad Brown was in today, another Brown. Chad Brown was in, and then you're wondering, well, could there be something up with Roosevelt Colvin with his injury from after the game? You know, it's hard to say right now. It's one of the more interesting in-season roster decisions that I can remember. I can't remember there being a looming roster move with this much intrigue involving a bunch of different guys, who might go, who might come. And, you know, every now and then, you know, you have an interesting decision like this in the midst of an 11-0 season. You know,
do you remember, by the way, the play that Colvin might have gotten hurt on?
You know,
because I never saw him, I noticed, you know, in a couple of series that he wasn't out there, and I probably didn't notice it until a series or two after
do remember him being treated on the field.
Okay.
And the interesting thing with that was he was on his feet, being assisted by trainers, and walked off on his own power, and it was reported to be a foot injury. There's you know, some thought that there was an arm injury involved, that he was here it is. It actually you know, I'm looking at the play by play right now. It was in the third quarter, during the drive where Philly scored to take a 28-24 lead. I mean, the play was a 19-yard pass by Philly to Kevin Curtis. And I don't recall if Colvin was in. I mean, Ellis Hobbs was listed as making the tackle. I think it just happened in the run of play. I don't think the focus was on Colvin. So I don't remember seeing exactly what happened. But he was, you know, he was on the field for 30 seconds or a minute with the trainers before walking off. So, you know, I definitely saw that, and, you know, listed as a foot injury. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. And, you know how things work here. Between Sunday when you get hurt and Wednesday when the injury report comes out, it's pure speculation. You just don't know. So, you know, we probably, you know, the only way we'd find anything out definitive about Colvin before this time of day tomorrow is if he goes on IR.
He was involved in the activating of Troy Brown.
Exactly. So Colvin going on IR is the only way we'd find out anything about his injury before tomorrow afternoon.
Right. Let's get a couple of other emails in here. Chelsea sends this one. Chelsea is, let's see, here we go. Well, so much for the 22-point spread. Do you think McNabb will still have a job after Feely's performance? Well, I actually saw in the Philadelphia papers today where they say that if he's healthy, McNabb's starting.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was in the press box, and I happened to be sitting right behind the row of Philadelphia reporters, and much like the Boston media, they travel well. Let's put it that way. They travel well, and they were, in my opinion, I don't know any of these guys, I think only semi-joking when, as Feely was completing pass after pass after pass and looking pretty good, you know, they were saying, have we, you know, McNabb's done. We've seen the last of McNabb. Now, I don't think that A.J. Feely is necessarily their quarterback of the future, but I think it might be one of those where, okay, as this week, the next couple weeks go on and McNabb still has a lingering injury, the Eagles will probably decide, you know what, let's just stick with Feely. We're going to, you know, he's still quote-unquote injured. He's not 100%. Let's play him. Maybe 2 or 3 weeks down the road when they really know or might have a better idea of what their future for 2007 holds as far as playoffs. Are we still in contention? Then they evaluate, well, we have a shot at the playoffs. McNabb gives us the best shot. We're going to play him. If it turns out that they're, you know, 5-9, and then down the stretch they probably get Kevin Cobb in there, and McNabb is done. I happen to think that all signs point to, not being in the Philadelphia market and knowing every day what goes on, that McNabb's probably done there. He's probably going to be traded in the offseason, and it might just be just one of those change of scenery types of situations for both teams. And when you draft a guy in the second round, you probably want to get the guy.
Got, you know, Kevin Cobb, so that's
right.
Why.
Now, that being said, the Cleveland Browns drafted a guy in the first round, but it doesn't seem like he's their quarterback of the future, so you never know what's going to happen. Derek Anderson coming out of nowhere this year. So, yeah. But I happen to think that McNabb is done after this year for them.
Really?
I do. I just think, it's hard not being, you know, I feel like I have a pretty good beat on what's going on with the Patriots.
They've already said that he's going to start if he's healthy.
The rest of this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that may be. I think that he won't be back next year.
Okay.
The combination of, you know, it hasn't been the smoothest ride this year. Maybe there's a coaching change as well. You draft a guy in the second round. McNabb's skills are probably declining, but he's at the point where he still definitely has value. You get the sense that he's had maybe an up and down relationship with the fans and media, and maybe a change of scenery is the right move. And put it this way. If the Eagles do decide that, you know, trading him is in our best interest, have you seen some of the quarterback play around the league? There probably will be teams who will give up more than you might expect for a guy who is still probably in his prime, probably the end of his prime, but is still a, if not Pro Bowl caliber quarterback, he's still probably a top 10 quarterback in the league who's done it in big games before. You know, I mean, he's performed on the big stage. Not necessarily well all the time, but hey, he led a team to 4 straight NFC Championship games and won one of them and got to the Super Bowl. And he's still only, well, he was drafted in 98, so he's probably right around 30, mm-hmm. You know, maybe a little older than Tom Brady. So I think there'll be a lot of teams, if the Eagles do decide that they're willing to trade him, they might even be blown away by an offer. So,
Dave in Storrs, Connecticut, I've got 2 questions. In your opinion, is Samuel having a better year this year than last year? Seems like no one throws his way anymore. If we had a competent corner on the other side, not Hobbs, he says, our defense would be so much better.
Well, not throwing his way anymore is a sign that he is having, or that he's more respected by the opponents than in the past. They might not be throwing his way as much. He still has 6 interceptions. He's tied for the league lead. Mm-hmm. So when they do throw his way, he makes the play. I mean, and then, you know, he's got 6, but in this game against Philly, he had 2. And then there was one other where he had a great read on the play. I forget, it was in the second half. Mm-hmm. I forget who the ball was intended for, that if he got his hands on it, he's taken that one to the house as well. I think that he's, last year the question was, well, is he having one tremendous career year in a contract year, and that's going to be it. Well,
I talked about that a little bit earlier. Yeah, the answer to that is, yeah, he's having the kind of year that you hope to have.
Right. And now he is still in a contract year once again. But I think the way he's performing, now that after last year, he reached that level where he's in the top tier of cornerbacks. And unless the Patriots had another elite cornerback on their roster, teams aren't going to throw to him. And that's a good sign. And when they do throw to him, when they do risk that, he makes the play. And I'll tell you what, the praise for him has been, effusive in the locker room. I mean, he's a really well-respected player on this team. I think he's a hard worker. I think he's just a classic case of a guy drafted in the fourth round, overachieving, and little by little, starting as a rookie, he didn't play much. Then, you're a nickelback. Then by your third year, you're a starter. By your fourth year, you're Pro Bowl caliber, and now he's going to be a Pro Bowler and maybe the most highly paid cornerback in the league come March.
All right. The other question was, is it just me, or does it seem like the Patriots never have any Monday night games at Foxborough?
it's an interesting one. They tend to have, it's a good question, and I don't know why this is. They tend to have Monday night road games and Sunday night home games. I'm not sure why that is, but if you look in recent years, they don't have a lot of Monday. When was their last Monday night home game? They've had in 04 and 05, it was a Thursday night. It was sort of the Monday night broadcast, but they opened the season on Thursday night.
When was our last Monday night game?
Their last Monday night home game, I don't believe last year. Last year they were at Minnesota on Monday night, and that may have been, the year before, 04, they were at Miami on Monday night.
We've had one at least in the last couple of years, had to, somewhere.
Yeah, several Sunday nighters.
Before it turned into an ESPN thing, though. It was still an ABC thing.
It hasn't been, I don't think it's been during the ESPN.
No, it has not been during the ESPN era. That much I'm pretty much assured of. So it had to have been 2 years ago.
Yeah, in 05. I can't remember, who it was or who it would have been. But
that's strictly an NFL decision, by the way. So.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any if there's a conspiracy here. It's just interesting. They do tend to play. They play plenty of primetime games. We know that. They tend to have the Sunday nighters at home and Mondays on the road. So, do the fans want more night games during the week?
I don't know. Not really.
No.
To be honest with you, no.
No.
I'd like to get back to good old-fashioned 1 o'clock Sunday games.
And I'll tell you what. It seems like there have been – there have been precious few of those.
I know. Especially
home or road. Yeah. At home, there will only have been two road 1 o'clock games this year. And
it was Dan says 05.
05?
Yeah.
Which one was it?
Which game was that? Turn on your mic. It's all right. Put your mic on.
Indianapolis.
That's 05.
Right.
There you go.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Okay.
All right. There you go. Doug in Miami. Patriot fans are spoiled. Yes?
No. Boston's spoiled? No.
No, never.
No. No chance.
Oh, I know. That's a good one. Thanks.
Is that it? That was the story.
That was it.
Boston fans are spoiled. More truth has never been spoken.
That's right. Oh, here's our guy in Norway, Henry. He says, what a great game Sunday. Got to give it to the Eagles. They showed up. They played an almost perfect game. Lito Shepherd played great, kept Randy Moss in check. By the way, Lito Shepherd did play a great game.
He did, and he's a good cornerback.
He's a very good back. I was just wondering about Randy Moss. How good was his mood during and after the game? If we get to the Super Bowl, I'd rather face the Packers than the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys got a better chance to defeat the Patriots than the last time we faced the Cowboys. I fear them a little bit, actually. I would hate to lose to Wade Phillips and Patrick Creighton. And for fun, here's my Pro Bowl Patriots this year. Brady, Moss, Light, Mankins, Wilfork, Vrabel, Samuel. Maybe Welker, too.
Don't forget Chris Hansen.
Yeah.
Leading the league in punter all-pro. No. Yeah. In Pro Bowl votes.
Pro Bowl votes?
He doesn't have enough.
He is?
As of a week ago.
He was leading the punter?
I'm not kidding. He didn't have enough punts to qualify for league leaders in any punting categories, yet he was leading the fan vote at AFC punter.
Wow.
That's
great.
The only explanation is that Patriots fans are voting in droves and just New England. Because it's not like Chris Hansen is the most well-known punter in the league.
Absolutely.
And people are voting and saying, oh, I know Chris Hansen. Let's just vote for him.
And by the way, I started out the show by saying that, if Wes Welker doesn't get on, it's a crime.
Well, you know.
It's an absolute crime.
Ultimately.
He was the MVP of the game on Sunday as far as the unsung hero.
Well, ultimately, my guess is his stats are going to be Pro Bowl worthy, but he's probably not going to
get in.
And that's just and there's a lot of different factors there. Sure. Among them being, you know, you got what, five wide receivers
and
in the
Moss
AFC.
Factor.
You're going to have Moss. I mean, are they? But anyways, I think you know his stats as it is. He's second in the league in receptions. He's you know his yardage is you know he's hovering around 900. I'm not sure exactly where that ranks. But boy, oh boy, I mean. His production is certainly tied to the way teams are covering Moss because they're leaving him open. But I'll tell you what, it's one thing to you know to be aware going into the game that it might be a big game for you because you might be able to get open. Mm-hmm. You still got to get open, and you still got to catch the ball, and you still got to get those yards after the catch. And wow, he does all three as well as anyone I've seen. I mean, he gets open. Better than anyone.
I totally.
His hands are
right
flawless,
yep.
And he's been. You know,
the whole point about him is that he's so low to the ground. He's just hard to defend, and he's hard to tackle.
Everyone says hard to defend. Yeah, he's just hard to cover.
That's right.
Yeah.
Chelsea sends another note, and she goes, "By the way, why did the Pats fans boo Salida Ebanks, the Victoria's Secret supermodel, when she was giving away free stuff on Sunday?" Now, I don't know. I didn't hear what she said, but I can only assume that something she said over the PA caused the fans to react. Does anybody know what
that
was?
You know, I don't. I've heard that, you know, I was in the press box as well, and you could only see the Jumbotron. Couldn't really hear what she
knows.
Was saying.
Dan
but
knows.
We do have our man on the scene on the field.
I couldn't make out exactly what she said, but I believe she misspoke and said Super Bowl instead of supermodel.
Oh.
She made a comment.
No, or was it the other way around?
Super Bowl, and she said, no, she said Super Bowl when she meant to say supermodel.
Did she say, I'm a Super Bowl?
I don't know what the comment
What do you guys think about having a real live Super Bowl here?
Oh, okay.
I don't know, but it was too bad.
Okay. It was kind of too bad. I mean, you know, I can't answer the question.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'd like to go back to, I think it was the previous email asking about Randy Moss. And, you know, what was exactly the question? If you can pull it up.
Let's see here.
I'd like to go back to that because I think there's an interesting.
He just said Lito Shipper played great. Oh, he said wondering how his mood was during and after the game.
Well, I don't know what it was after the game. He wasn't available for comment, and that's not unusual. I mean, he's I think out of 11 games, he's spoken to the media three times after game. So that's not unusual. I did hear a few different things. You know, I think there may be. Something to watch out for. You know, it's been a perfect ride. It's been a perfect ride for Randy Moss,
mm-hmm.
Team-wise and individual-wise. That you know, he's never had that combination. Back in Minnesota in '98, you know, it was pretty close his rookie year, and they had an unbelievable season. But you do wonder if there are consecutive games. I'm not going to say that after one game any chance that we're going to see hints of the old Randy Moss from a. You know, an attitude and demeanor standpoint, you wonder if there are consecutive games where teams make it a point to take him out of the game and say, hey, if Wes Welker beats us, good for you. If Jabbar Gaffney beats us, good for you. We're not letting Randy Moss beat us. You wonder if the honeymoon period would end. Because so far he's proven that he's a team guy and all that, but it's been under perfect circumstances. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt until we see or hear anything otherwise. But, you know, let's say Baltimore says, hey, you know, we've been waiting for this day, and we saw what Philadelphia did. We are putting two, if not three, defenders on him. Wes Welker's not going to have a bigger day than he did against Philadelphia. Let's make Dante Stallworth beat us. Let's make Lawrence Maroney beat us, even Benjamin Watson. What if they take him out of the game, and he has three catches for 45 yards and no mm-hmm. touchdowns, and, hey, let's even take it a step further. What if he has a poor game and the Patriots lose? You know, I don't know. Like I said, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt until we see otherwise. But you wonder if there could be a honeymoon period ending if he has consecutive games where his production isn't strong.
Brian in Connecticut says, I just wanted to say enough of this blueprint crap. Are you going to say that suddenly the league has found a chink in the armor? Blueprint, schmooprint. Don't these people realize that the best blueprint man is at the helm of the Pats? While I will give the Eagles credit for making this game the toughest hurdle the Pats have faced this season, let's be honest and realize that there will be close games this season. And by the way, they're still undefeated. So relax, people. The rest of the league has been studying film of the Patriots the whole season, so they all know the same thing. The other teams would have to play almost flawless football to stop the Patriots.
Yeah, you know, the whole blueprint thing definitely overrated. I don't buy into that because I think that not you know the Eagles came in with a terrific game plan and clearly are well coached. You know, they were well coached and pretty good execution. But you know, I don't think it's you know, they were reinventing the way NFL is played by deciding, you know what, we're going to try to put a lot of pressure on Tom Brady and see how he handles that, and we're going to try to take Randy Moss out of the picture. And you know, offensively, you know, we're going to you know, use Brian Westbrook. We're going to spread the ball around. I don't think that they were they came up with anything that has never been seen before in the NFL. It's a little surprising that more teams through the first 10 games didn't do what the Eagles did defensively and really get after Brady and really force him to get rid of the ball quicker and force the wide receivers to get open quicker. You know, whether or not the Eagles. You know, maybe the Eagles were just the first team that had the horses to do it. Maybe other teams have had that game plan in mind. They just haven't been able to execute it, and the Eagles were. I think we'll see a little more of that, but I don't think the Eagles have shown every team in the NFL something that they didn't know before.
They didn't already know, yeah. Right. Iggy in Madrid says, I'm scared.
Iggy.
Yes, I'm scared after seeing Eddie Jackson at corner last Sunday. He looked awfully slow to me. And what happened with Torrey James? Any chance of getting a better corner before the playoffs? Well, Torrey was a preseason Kudinski.
Yeah.
So, and any chance of getting a better corner? No.
No. At this stage, anyone who's out there is out there for a reason.
Called a street free agent.
Exactly. Now, they've had success with street free agents in the past. Artrell
Hawkins was a street free agent.
And so was Jabbar Gaffney. Now, those guys were signed earlier. Now, once you get into this point, I think it's hard because, you know, if a guy's out at this point, he's probably been out of the league for a couple months and, you know, conditioning might be a factor. Hawkins, I want to say, was signed in late September of 05. Gaffney, it was late September, early October. So you do, you know, sometimes you get guys who can make an impact. Eddie Jackson, no, he's listed as a cornerback, but I really don't think the Patriots intend to have him play meaningful minutes at cornerback. He's a special teams guy. And there were a few moments on Sunday where I think Ellis Hobbs had gone out briefly. Randall Gay left the game with an injury. And, you know, the way the Eagles were playing, you needed to have a nickel cornerback package out there, if not six defensive backs. And he's one of your guys. And I don't think we're going to see him too often. He doesn't have a lot of game experience, so obviously not this year, at cornerback. I think you know, that's an emergency situation. Now, tying this all back to Troy Brown, if you have an idea of where I'm going, could Troy Brown's role at defensive back be relived, you know, be brought back?
I don't see why it couldn't.
I don't see why it couldn't either. Now personally, and I had this conversation with someone yesterday, when you're talking about Rashad Baker, Eddie Jackson, and then you throw Troy Brown into the mix, would I rather have Troy Brown ahead of those guys? My answer is no. at defensive back. My answer is no, you know, because Troy Brown hasn't played in a game yet this year. He has limited career experience at defensive back. He's 37 years old, and some of these guys like Rashad Baker have at least been in the system and been practicing at cornerback every day or at defensive back every day. But it's interesting. It's an interesting little twist on what I already said was one of the more interesting in-season looming transactions that we've had in a while. So I guess we got to keep that in mind, too. You know, we got to keep that in mind. But don't worry. I wouldn't think that we're going to see a lot of Eddie Jackson at cornerback going forward, unless it's an in-game emergency type of situation.
Right. Brian in Honolulu. While watching the game, I thought the Eagles were using the Super Bowl 36 game plan that the Pats used against the Rams. That was the blueprint. I would say, I mentioned this earlier in the program, I wasn't quite sure that that was exactly what they were doing, although they were allowing the middle to be exploited. I don't think they applied press coverage near as much as the Patriots did against the Rams.
Mm.
And I don't think they tried to either. In fact, Patriots defensive backs were way off the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
They were soft for a reason.
Yeah.
That was the game plan. They were going to allow them to catch it in front of them. Because, frankly, I don't think they thought that Feely would get them the ball.
No,
and I think they were almost burned by that, to be honest with you.
Right, I think you know, I certainly didn't think. I think a lot of people didn't expect Feely to be able to have nearly this much success. And you know, did the Patriots defense? I think the Patriots understood some of the capabilities of the Eagles wide receivers, and you know, they did face AJ Feely in the past in Miami. That game that you know that Feely was a quarterback where Miami won. On that Monday night game a couple years ago, is as much a factor was Brady throwing those late interceptions and getting hit, but Feely was the quarterback, engineered a few drives there. So they weren't starting from ground zero on studying up Feely, but I don't think anyone could have expected A.J. Feely to be the one to have the best passing stats of any quarterback they face this year.
Right.
Romo, Palmer, Manning. You know, they faced some pretty good ones, and A.J. Feely had, you know, probably the most success.
Which was somewhat surprising. He says, right. How about some love for the only undefeated team in Division One, the Hawaii Warriors?
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to end up in the Fiesta Bowl.
They're now the only ones. Right, because Missouri
and
Kansas
and they won the WAC by defeating Boise State last week. They're now 12th, I think, in the BCS. So it doesn't look like they can be kept out of a BCS game,
right.
which is good for them. Good for them.
You know, if you're D1, you go undefeated. You know, unless there's 3, 4, 5, or 6 teams that are undefeated in D1, you know, you should be playing for one of those.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anthony from England says, oh, hey, guys, just listening in from the United Kingdom on
Beautiful.
The Pats website. Pip, pip, old chap. Great show. Just dropping in to say hi.
Okay. Well, I know we had a big...
Hi, Anthony.
A big UK Patriots fan club contingent here at the game on Sunday.
Did we really?
We did. They come every year. They have a huge tailgate party, and they were out and about in the stadium. We're actually, point this week, we're going to have some, we're out there with them. I wasn't personally, but we're going to have some stuff on them in Patriots Today this week. They come out once a year, a pack of a couple dozen, and I think they have a pretty good time. And the fact that it was a night game that they came to meant a long day in the parking lot.
Absolutely.
Right?
No
right?
kidding. Dave in Abington, Virginia, so speaking, he said, we're talking about Welker. He says, speaking of Welker, who's kicking butt, he says, do you know what happened yet with Troy Brown today? And as we said at the top of the hour, the answer to that is no, not yet.
No, Dan, you're reloading that. You're reloading your email inbox there and everything to see if we got anything on Troy?
Okay.
All right, Dan's on the case.
He's right on top
but
of it.
But, yeah, no, that is looming soon.
So if we get the announcement before we're done here, right. we'll be sure to pass it on to you.
We
but
sure
if
will.
Not, let me suggest to you that if you don't hear anything by 4 o'clock Eastern time, just refresh your browser. It'll probably be here on the website.
Exactly.
So that's all you got to do.
Exactly.
Okay, gentlemen, greetings from Ann Arbor, Michigan, college home of Tom Brady. Yes,
yeah.
We knew that. He says, as one who attended Sunday night's game against the Eagles, obviously one of the closest of the season, I wanted to comment on how calm and collected not only the Patriots were on the field, but also the fans off the field in the stands, as opposed to Eagles fans that were offering insults and, exploratives, as well as Spygate comments every chance they could. And, yes, we all remember having to listen to them in Jacksonville. He says, hats off to the entire organization, from owner Robert Kraft to Coach Bill Belichick, to the incredible fans of New England. Congratulations. The Patriots are a class organization from the ground up, and without a doubt, the model franchise in the NFL. Patriots fans suffered for many years, and despite recent success, realized that their 11-0 team is on the verge of history, something very special. I wish everyone in Patriots Nation the very best of luck as they continue their pursuit of perfection. From Peter in Ann Arbor.
Mm.
Thank you for the note, Peter.
Wow. Well, they love Brady out there, I guess. And who's their coach going to be out there in Ann Arbor?
It's a good question. I still think Les Miles is going to get offered the job.
Yeah. How about Houston Nutt making a fairly quick transition from one job to another? 24 hours?
Yeah, you'd have to think that something might have been in the works beforehand.
No, you're not.
You know what? We really want you to stay, Houston. This is the conversation that happened at Arkansas, right? We really want you to stay after you've knocked off the number one team in the nation. He's like, guys, no thanks. I think I'll pass. I think it's probably best if I move on. Dip, he already had a stinking job from Ole Miss waiting in the wings.
You're not saying the you're not saying the T word was involved. Tampering, did you?
No.
That doesn't happen in any sport.
No.
That caught my attention.
Listen, I frankly don't blame him because Arkansas fans are kind of unrealistic anyway, to be honest with you. So, you know, he's, you know, gotten a lot of heat, you know, over the years in Arkansas, and he had this whole coaching staff shakeup and whole controversy over a kid he recruited and just so it's kind of like, I don't need this anymore. I've done about what I can do here. I'm going to go on where I can be more appreciated. And you know they're going to appreciate him at Ole Miss. So I think it's actually a pretty good move on his behalf.
If you don't follow college football and you turn on SportsCenter or something today and the over-the-shoulder photo above whatever anchor and under it says nut, do you wonder, like, what are they saying about this guy? What are they saying about this nut? What's going on here? But the second T kind of helps.
Yeah.
N-U-T-T.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's see. Dave in Abington writes back. He says, the Pats won. All the players say they did not play their best game, so I think Bill will go lightly on them this week, and the team will get motivation internally. Humble pie off the menu. He says, by the way, goodbye to Asante Samuel. Thanks for all that you have done, just like Deion Branch, Ty Law, Drew Bledsoe, Adam Vinatieri, William McGinnis, Lawyer Malloy.
Well,
unlike those guys, I think he'd probably be leaving with still some of his
best
football to be played.
The difference between, I mean, we don't know how it's all going to finish up with Asante Samuel. I mean, stranger things have happened than the Patriots deciding we're going to sign this guy long term, but I don't know. The difference, as you said, between Asante Samuel and most of these other guys, Asante Samuel is probably or perhaps just hitting his prime. I mean, this guy's 5 years into his career. He's progressed to the point where, he's gradually progressed the way a fourth-round pick, you hope a fourth-round pick does. And, all those other guys, I mean, when those guys left, whether they were cut or they were free agents, they didn't sign, these contracts. Ty Law signed a contract with the Jets that you could see right through. It was technically like a 7-year, $40 million contract, but it was really like 1 year because there was a huge, huge bonus payment. Asante Samuel is going to get a legit guaranteed contract offer in the 30 or 40 million range. These other guys were either past their prime or Asante Samuel is just hitting his prime. That's the big difference. So when you say that, I think we should keep in mind that if Asante Samuel leaves the Patriots, he may still have his best years ahead of him. So,
I agree.
We'll see how that plays out. I mean, that would be at this point, that would be a major loss for the Patriots because they don't have that next.
No, but I think they, like I said earlier, I think they apply a value to a position, and I think he's going to exceed that value, and I think they'll feel like they can make that up someplace else, and they're going to tell him, go get your money.
Right, and they also feel that if we can find Asante Samuel in the fourth round once,
we'll find
the next guy in the next draft.
We'll find him again.
And maybe they feel, I think a lot of people might argue with this, maybe they feel that Ellis Hobbs is ready to take that next step to be number one. And maybe they feel that Willie Andrews is a candidate to, step it up. Or maybe they feel like Brandon Merriweather is a candidate to become a number two cornerback or something like that. They, at one point, Asante Samuel was third behind Ty Law and Tyrone Poole.
Right.
Well, they probably figured Asante Samuel's ready to step up. We can let Ty Law go and we see how that worked out. So they probably have a plan in place. Whether it pans out perfectly, we don't know. But
Andrew in Orange City, Florida, a lot of Florida emails today, says, the following are good reasons why the Patriots' glass is half full. On offense, the glass is half full because the Patriots' offensive machine was not stopped, just put into a slower gear. True or false?
Say that one again. The Patriots...
The glass is half full because the Patriots' offensive machine wasn't stopped, just put into a slower gear.
Yeah, It was,
true or false, Brian?
I would say true.
Okay.
They still had a pretty good game.
they did.
Still had a pretty good game.
31 up on the board and 410 yards.
Right. 24. They put up 24 points offensively because of Asante Samuel's interception.
True.
But that's not a bad. If you score 24 points every game,
should keep you.
You might not
games.
Win all of them, but you're going to win
should
most
keep
of them.
You most
so
games.
Hey, the Eagles did a good job. I mean,
on defense, the glass is half full because they stopped the run and gambled on forcing interceptions, succeeding just enough. True or false?
Sure, true.
Concerning quarterback play, the glass is three-quarters full because
the Patriots
Tom Brady,
quarterback play?
Yes, I guess. Because
three-quarters full?
Listen, because Tom Brady threw a measly single touchdown. He aired it up 54 times and was picked off zero times. True or false?
The stats are true. I mean, listen.
Andrew's giving us some weird ones here.
If you're saying it's the glass is only 75% full on Tom Brady because he only threw one touchdown pass, give the guy a break.
Finally, the glass is half full because we've seen that the mighty Pats are human and could indeed fall, and that makes for exciting games. True or false?
I'm on record as saying that I wouldn't mind a few
false.
Good...
False! I don't like it!
I don't mind a few good, close, competitive, interesting games.
I mind them. I like hanging half a hundred on people.
You know what? But you know what? I wouldn't mind once from an intrigue standpoint if they put half a hundred on another team, but that team puts on 49 as well.
Yeah.
Kill me. I enjoyed the indie game. I enjoyed this game. I don't mind a good competitive game where, and at the end of the day you said, wow, that was a pretty good football team as opposed to, wow, the Patriots played well.
Mm-hmm.
I like these games.
Greg from Hungary. How about
we're all over the
Hungary,
map.
And we had Spain, and
England.
Who else did we have?
England.
Yeah,
we had,
definitely today. Yeah. And a lot in Florida today, too.
Yeah, Norway. Didn't, was there
Norway. We had Norway today, too. All right. I think that there's no real blueprint for beating the Pats. The reason for that is Bill Belichick and the ability of this team to examine games' tapes. I don't know if anyone noticed it, but they're improving every week, always work on their flaws that come up during games. Let me give an example. The game versus Indy, Joe Adai ran all over, had more than 200 all-purpose yards. This weekend, Brian Westbrook, he says, just just as good a running back as a die, if not better, was held to 92 all-purpose yards, and he had led the league before the game without 180 per game, and an amazing 52 yards on 17 carries, which was just above 3 yards per carry. I think the run defense of the team improved a lot. So I think the reason why nobody will be able to beat us until our key players remain healthy is Bill Belichick, the reviewability of the coaching staff, and Tom Brady. Yeah, he's the most amazing leader in the NFL today. He keeps his teammates motivated, never gives up on games, and even though it seems like there's no further chance of winning, I hope Brady and Moss and the Pats will shatter every possible record en route to their fourth Super Bowl win in 7 years. And he said, I'd like to say something about Wes Welker. To be honest, alongside Brady, he's my favorite player. I like him because he's the kind of go-to guy that Brady can always rely on, who moves the chains, nearly impossible to defend because he's quick and he's so low to the ground. Of course, I also like Randy Moss and hope that he'll stay with us next year, but I think Wes Welker is more important to us. I'd also like to say something about Lawrence Maroney. I think Maroney's a good, he says, quarterback. He's just not been so lucky this season. In my opinion, if he would have had more touches, his stats would be much better, but he still runs around 4.6 yards per carry, which is not all that bad. He says, I watch all the Pats games live via the NFL Game Pass, even though they're at nearly impossible times for me when there's a night game because we're 6 hours ahead of you guys here in Hungary. But I always stay up because it's just a privilege to watch this Pats team week by week.
2:30 in the morning is not a good time for him to watch
football?
I guess
not. Huh. What else would you be doing, Greg?
Yeah. All right, I don't know where to start. There were a lot of topics addressed there.
Pick one, and
okay.
We'll move on here.
Let me just, two quick ones.
Okay.
Get used to Wes Welker.
Yes.
Get used to Wes Welker. He's the only guy long-term at wide receiver. He's the only guy guaranteed to be here for multiple years.
Right.
At wide receiver. So get used to him. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Lawrence Maroney. Here's what I think about Lawrence Maroney. I think that there's I don't think you're going to see a team have their lead running back on the sidelines for an entire first half if they fully trust the guy. I don't care what your game plan is going in. If your number one running back was not on the field once in the first half, clearly what the Patriots were trying to do was four wide receivers, spread it out. You know, Kevin Faulk was in there for most of the half. They had really the same offensive formation or personnel for most of the first half. They're four wide receivers, Moss, Stallworth, Welker, and Gaffney, and Faulk. If you fully trusted Lawrence Maroney and had full confidence in him, how come he's not even in there once? I don't care what your game plan is. He's your lead running back, right? So I'm not going to say that Lawrence Maroney, you know, has no role in this offense, but that was questionable. He's healthy, and he was on the sideline for the entire first half. That raised my eyebrows, and I know that the coaches have given him praise in the last week. And part of it must be game plan, but an entire first half? It's not an entire second half where you're up by 40.
No.
It's the entire first half.
I know.
It just, that was a little.
I have to admit, it was also a little disconcerting.
Yeah.
Kevin, after watching the Monday Night Football game, has there been any movement from the league to force the Steelers to replace their field with turf? I don't think the field in Gillette ever was as bad as it was in Heinz Stadium. The punted ball stuck when it hit the ground. I saw that. As a Patriot fan wearing my tinfoil hat when imagining league conspiracies, especially when the league forces the Patriots to do something and seemingly ignores another.
No, I don't think the league is ignoring this, but keep this in mind. The league didn't force the Patriots to do anything until after they had a game like the one we saw last night.
Right.
So,
now
like, hold on here.
Yeah.
Here's the logistical problem. The Steelers host a game Sunday, so they go Monday night home, Sunday night home. I don't think they're going to be able to do anything this week. They might not be able to do anything this year. But I'd be stunned if that is replaced.
No, because I mentioned earlier in the show, Brian, that you know I would be surprised if they had to do anything in the year because when we had our turf
replaced
here, we had like an 18-day span
which
to do it where we weren't playing here.
Right, exactly.
So unless the Steelers have something comparable, it's not happening this year.
No, but you know, just keep that in mind. Last year, that game against the Jets, which was the worst that we probably saw here, and it wasn't as bad as what we saw in Pittsburgh,
right.
there will be a change.
It was pretty funny, though.
It really was. And it was that particularly, but it was, you know, the Steelers are not 3 points better than the Dolphins.
No.
They're far better. They're better than that.
In theory.
And the weather and the field conditions sort of equal, you know, was the, you know, that great equalizer. I think that, you know, the Dolphins had chances to win only because of the field and the weather.
Right.
So there will be a change, whether it's the NFL forcing them to or it's Heinz Field and the Steelers deciding this makes most sense. That will happen. Just keep in mind, they host Cincinnati Sunday night. I don't know what the weather forecast is for Western Pennsylvania all week, but I don't know if the field is going to be that much better come Sunday night.
Jason in Boston says, can we please, please, please start giving Welker a little more credit? When he goes out there and has a monster game, well, what I'm saying, here, let me finish. Like he did Sunday night, most people are saying that it's because Randy Moss was being doubled. Although this is partly true, Randy has nothing to do with Welker getting big yards after the catch. He's flourished since coming from Miami and, in my mind, is more of a reliable number two than Stallworth. I mentioned off the top of the show exactly this point. So, obviously, Jason, he came in a bit late. But, yes, Welker deserves not only credit, he deserves to be a Pro Bowl receiver based on what he's done because he's so hard to defend. We just don't happen to think that, unfortunately, I don't think he's going to end up getting that nod.
No, look, it's both. Welker doesn't make 13 catches in that game if Randy Moss is not covered the way he was. But you still have to get open, you still have to catch the ball, and you still got to make the yards after the catch. Welker is doing that as good as anybody possibly could. He's playing that position, slot receiver, catching the underneath balls, as well or better than anyone possibly could.
Right.
And it's partly a result of the way teams or some teams have defended Randy Moss, but I'm giving him plenty of credit. I mean, you've got to still get the job done. It's one thing, you know, if you or I were out there playing the position that Welker was and the teams were covering, double covering Moss, we still have to get open, still have to catch the ball. You know, he's doing that well.
All right, a couple of other quick ones here. James and Jamie in Brunswick, Maine. The number of records being broken or tied this year by the Patriots is phenomenal. Should they run the table, they'll have tied their own 21-game streak. No, not quite.
Be no. 19. What is it?
It would be 19. I think he's thinking the two preseason games, those don't count.
No. If they obviously lost their last postseason game last year,
right.
They'd win 19 in a row. Yeah, the record's 21. They'd have to wait until week two next year.
Do they or will they stand as the best NFL or all sports team ever, or at least since the merger? Possibly, and I'm sure that will be talked about.
Yeah.
He says, has anything ever been made of the fact that the 72 Dolphins were fined a first-round pick due to the inappropriate acquisition of Shula? Oh, yeah.
That came up earlier this year.
Yes, we definitely
mentioned that. When Shula made his comments.
James says, would there be a conflict of interest if the Patriot organization were to help in pressuring the cable companies in the Northeast to show NFL Network?
Yes, there would, because technically the Patriots own a portion of the NFL Network.
Yes,
so,
right.
Yeah, there would be.
But don't think that they're in something going on. They can certainly suggest highly, wink, wink.
Yeah.
Glenn in Calgary, Alberta, given the appalling morass, and I like that word, the morass, that last night's game was played in, exactly what would it take for the NFL to cancel a game?
I'll tell you what, clearly it would take a lot, because I thought last night's would have been the one. I mean, if there was, three consecutive hours of lightning, they would cancel a game. Not playing in lightning. But I thought the field conditions were, they seemed to be borderline unsafe for the players based on the way, you couldn't really get footing, you couldn't really run. I would imagine that people who have more who are more intelligent on that matter
I don't ever see them canceling a game.
It would take a lot because
the field would have to be underwater.
Right.
I think that's the only way that they would ever
cancel a game once. To cancel a game at the hour the game is supposed to, a day before a game, maybe.
Or they would do that in case of a hurricane or something like coming through or whatever.
But they would either, ideally they have enough time to move it to another venue.
That's
or something
what they
like
would
that.
Do. Right.
I think,
they would not out now cancel it. They just postpone it.
There's a lot at stake between the fans, the TV, the teams
themselves. Too much money involved. Scott in Washington, D.C. John and Brian, we're all waiting for news on Troy, but Mike Reese has a tidbit on another Brown. Chad Brown was apparently spotted at the stadium today, which you mentioned earlier.
Yep.
Please tell me this is
And
not,
I'll give credit to Mike Reese, too. That's where I saw it.
Please tell me this is not some indication that Rosie Colvin's injury is that serious. I like Chad Brown, but not as a full-time starter. I'd rather see Pierre Woods getting snaps there. Any thoughts on Chad Brown and Rosie Colvin?
Well, it can't be a coincidence.
I agree with him, by the way, on Pierre Woods.
Yeah. Well, it can't be a coincidence that Rosie Colvin might have an injury. But here's the thing. The Patriots are five deep at linebacker. With all due respect to Pierre Woods, Eric Alexander, and Larry Izzo, they have five regular rotation.
They would simply move Seau and Bruschi to the inside and move Thomas outside.
Absolutely, and that's fine, and that's all well and good. Are you telling me that Bruschi and Seau are playing every snap of the game inside?
That's what apparently would happen if Colvin's out.
Here's the thing. If Colvin has to miss, if it seems like Colvin's going to miss, let's say, two games, I think they do need to bring in a guy like Chad Brown, and probably Chad Brown himself, not a guy like, but probably Chad Brown himself, and sacrifice a body at another position, because you need to have it. Those four guys are playing really well collectively, and I mean really well, but you can't risk having that little depth at linebacker with these guys. They're all in their 30s. They all have there's some injury history there. You got to bring someone in, and that's probably what it is. I don't know if they're going to sign Chad Brown necessarily right away, but at least he's been around for a couple years. I don't really think he's a great I think he's lost a lot, and I'd question how good he's going to be, but you got to do something there if Colvin's going to miss any time.
All right, two more quick ones, then we're going to get off to Coach Belichick here. Pat says, sup, John?
Sup.
Sup. Too scary of a game on Sunday night. Got to admit, you New England Patriots got me. Now let's get back to the blowing teams out and burning opponents to the third degree. I especially give Philly credit for their 28 points because when Dallas put 27 and Miami put theirs up, they both had defensive touchdowns. Philly did it all on offense. Good job. He says, hey, Brian, since you're around, tell Christina. I said, what's up?
I will. Okay. I will. And who was that from again?
That was from Pat.
Pat, okay. No, okay. I will absolutely tell her what's up.
Shane.
That's what I say every day I walk in. Sup, Christina.
Sup. Shane in Miami. John and Brian, how concerned are you guys about the lack of pass coverage in the middle of the field? This is not a new problem. Pats have been exposed there before. How can they fix the problem before they place somebody else who can exploit it better than the Eagles?
Yeah, well, that's a concern. I mean, they were soft over the middle. There were a lot of holes there. And tackling is an issue, too. It's one thing if they make the catch and then they're immediately brought down. Tackling's a bit of an issue, too. And, this was definitely a game where overall, I'm sure if we saw the percentages, most passes were going over the middle as opposed to the sidelines. We saw what happened with Samuel when they went to the sidelines. But, that's a concern. And I think James Sanders has been progressively improving. I think Rodney Harrison, he's not having his best year. But I think, that's a concern. The over the middle pass coverage. And that's where also, linebacker play comes into play there, too. Guys dropping back into coverage and, that's a concern. That's a concern.
By the way, thanks for playing our game, Ricky Williams. Apparently, his 2007 season's over.
Oh.
Six carries, that he did
IR?
Have on IR. Well, he apparently has torn a chest muscle. So he hasn't been put on IR, but I guess apparently looks like that, according to an unnamed Miami source, he won't be playing anymore.
That'll be it, huh?
Tough.
That'll be it.
It's tough. All right. Below, what's on Patriots today?
A little more on the Eagles game. We are talking about the A.J. Feely performance and getting some Patriot perspective on why and how Feely was able to have the success he did. And then on the other hand, why and how the Eagles were able to get some pressure on Brady. Looking at a few other, some of the other numbers from this game, a few more, milestones or records. And,
right.
That's what we're taking care of. Now, we're going to Belichick from yesterday?
Yes.
I thought it was a particularly interesting press conference.
Yes,
a little feisty
it was.
At times.
Yes, it was.
I'm going to go. That was the word I was using, feisty. So I think that
good.
If you haven't heard this one yet, you're going to enjoy it.
I think you will. And tomorrow, same Pat's time, same Pat's channel, as we start delving into the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, no conference calls
next
quite
Monday.
Yet, though, until Thursday.
No, because of
the Monday
day
nighter.
Off. Right, exactly. So we'll have to figure something else out, right?
And I'm sure you will. You're
I'm
a vet.
Sure
you're a veteran
will.
Of this experience.
Absolutely. All right, here's Coach Belichick.
Okay, well, just, really, I don't think there's a whole lot new to add from last night. Just follow up a couple things from there. I thought, not taking anything away from anybody else, but, Andy Reid and Jim Johnson, I think, do as good a job of coaching in this league as anybody. They certainly, did an excellent job last night of having their team ready to go and doing things on both sides of the ball that were, very, very competitive and difficult at times for us. So, the Eagles are a good football team. They made a lot of plays. Fortunately, we made a couple more than they did, and that was a difference in the game. I thought the players, on both sides played hard. It was a physical game. Even though it was a lot of passing, there was a lot of physical play in the line of scrimmage and also the tackling and the hitting downfield. And in the kicking game was very competitive. So, it's good to, good to come out of that game with a win and be 11-0. And we're looking at another team kind of similar to the Eagles in Baltimore with physical team. Team's got a lot of veteran players that knows how to play, knows how to win. Been in a lot of tough situations, and I think that showed up in last night's game. you know, on both sides of the ball, or both teams, you know, veteran players, guys that have been in a lot of tough games, stepped up, and I think that's the same kind of situation we'll have this week in Baltimore down there. So that's kind of where we're at today. We'll take a look at this one, correct some mistakes, and move on. Tom's pretty tough. That's one of his many assets. He's pretty tough.
What was your take on just the way he was able to get up after Tom's sack? Pretty hard kid.
Yeah. Well, I said Tom's a tough kid, mentally and physically. Very tough. So, you know, he does a lot of things well. He's got a lot of attributes, and that's certainly one of them.
Bill, how were the Eagles able to get as much pressure on him as they did? Other teams haven't been able to get to him that much this season.
Yeah, well, they, you know, like I said, they did a good job. They got good players. They got good coaches. You know, they had a couple schemes that we had trouble with. You know, there were plenty of times when they didn't, and, you know, we threw the ball pretty effectively on them, so... You know, they made some plays. We made a few more than they did, but they made some plays and made plenty of them.
Coach, as the season goes along, does this get tougher to sort of forget about that big record that's looming over your head every week and try to stay focused on the next game? And how do you keep everybody's...
You guys are the only ones that are talking about
him. The whole country's talking about him.
You guys are the ones that are talking about him. We focused on Philadelphia all week, and this week we'll focus on Baltimore. That's what we do.
So. I was just wondering, with everyone talking about it, does that make it harder for you guys to focus on?
We focus on Baltimore.
Is a game like yesterday such a close game in a season in which you've had so many blowout wins, wide margins?
The last three have been like that.
Right. But are those good for the team in the sense that, you know, you have the accolades?
Every game in this league is tough. Every game in this league is tough. So they all are different. They all have their own elements. They have their own special plays and situations. And, you know, we've been in plenty of games like this before. Some we've won, some we haven't. But, you know, it comes down to, you know, key plays at the end of the game. Play for a long time, and it comes down to just a few plays and being able to make them or not make them. That determines who wins and who loses.
Does it amaze you, the expectation level that seems to be attached to your team? You know, so many people on the outside
we expect to win every week. You know, I'm not saying we expect to win every game, but each week we prepare for the game, we expect to win that game. That's the way we prepare for it. We don't go into any game thinking we don't win it. So we'll go into this game, you know, prepared for it and expecting to go down there and play well and beat Baltimore. That's the way we go into every game.
But the fact that a lot of people on the outside
expect... I don't care what everybody else thinks. I can tell you what this team thinks. Right now we're thinking about getting ready for Baltimore. That's how we approach the game. I can't tell you what anybody else thinks. I don't care what everybody else thinks. It doesn't make any difference.
Coach, as productive as Randy Moss has been, what does he... I don't know if contribute's the right word, but what does he allow... in terms of your other targets, even when he's not the active or primary target?
That makes
sense.
Okay. Well, passing game is it's team production. You know, all the passes don't go to one guy. So you run the patterns based on the coverage. Quarterback throws the ball to the receiver that has the lightest coverage or has the best leverage on his defender based on the route he's running to the open. That's how it works. Sometimes it's the outside guy, sometimes it's the inside guy, sometimes it's the receiver. Sometimes it's a tight end, sometimes it's a back. Just that's the way the passing game is. So it's not like the quarterback goes back there and says, well, I'm going to throw it to so-and-so on this play. You go back there, you look at the coverage, you see what they're playing, and you take your options based on that. That's what the passing game is. At least that's what ours is. You know, unless it's a screen pass or something like that where, you know, you just really have one receiver. But I'm not talking about those plays. I'm talking about a normal drop-back passing game or even play-action passes. It's based on what their coverage is and what the matchups are. And that's what Tom does. That's where our offense is designed. So.
Bill, I'm interested in the evolution of the 3-4. Can you elaborate a little bit on the difference now in today's game versus, say, in the 70s when you were first breaking into the league? And, you know, it's in vogue now with the changes in the game.
Well, there wasn't a lot of 3-4 in the 70s. You know, most of that was 4-3, and then, you know, it started a little bit in with Miami, with Coach Shula down there in a 53 defense, Matheson and all that, and then it became pretty popular, though, in the 80s. You know, you had a lot of teams running it. In fact, at a point where I think even some of the Pro Bowls were the squad is made up of a 3-4 front as opposed to a 4-3 front. So, you know, more teams are running it.
The fact that more teams are running it now, how does that impact you and how you run your defense and you know, personnel or opponents being prepared for it? What do you have to adjust to with that?
Well, we run our defense based on what we think is best for the New England Patriots. Sure, everybody else runs theirs based on what they think's best for Dallas or Cleveland or Pittsburgh or, you know, whoever else is running it. You know, teams are running it, then sometimes you get a look at how the other team's going to block it or maybe, you know, scheme it, as opposed to if you happen to catch, you know, three or four games where a team doesn't see that type of front, then you might not have as good an idea of how they're going to be prepared to handle some of those things. Not that they aren't ready to handle them, you just haven't, you don't see the evidence on the film. So, you know, to a certain extent, that's, you know, gives you an opportunity to see how they do it. On the other hand, you know, it gives them an opportunity to block that front and, you know, get their execution down. So, you know, it works both ways.
Bill, do you expect that the teams you play in the future to kind of take the Eagles playbook now? Because it seems like they did a few things there.
I don't know. You'd have to talk to those teams. I don't know what they're going to do. All I know is that we're going to try to do, and that's prepare for Baltimore and, you know, study them, get to know them. It's a team we haven't played in a while. Learn their personnel, learn their schemes, and be ready to play down there Monday night. What they're going to do, you'd have to talk to them.
In the past, you've mentioned Jabbar Gaffney and said he's a real technician, the way he runs his routes. Was that kind of the case last night where he was running precision routes and getting open?
Yeah, Jabbar's a good route runner. He's a versatile guy, plays a lot of different positions for us, plays inside, plays outside. He's a good technique route runner, both on man coverage, zone, finding open spots, you know, running short routes, running vertical routes. You know, he's got a lot of good receiving skills and he can do a lot of different things. He's a valuable guy for us.
Have you reached a decision on Troy as yet?
No.
That's coming down soon.
Tomorrow.
Bill, having watched the tape, were they any more physical with Randy at the line than other teams you played?
No, they play how they play. I think they play how they play. So that's how they play. I mean, I think you watch the Eagles play all the teams they play, and that's the way they play in the secondary.
Was that one of the most nitpickiest calls on Randy Moss in the end zone, the offensive pass interference?
It's a tough call.
How often did they rotate help for this side? Was that an every play?
No. No. They did it. They didn't do it. They mixed it up.
In terms of not biting on underneath stuff to other guys and making sure they stayed at home again?
I mean, I don't know. It's hard to compare their defense to somebody else's defense. They don't run the same defenses. So.
I guess my question is, did they make sure, you know, their safeties were a little more aware, I guess, of Randy?
I'd give you the same answer I just gave you. They mixed it up. They did different things. They pressured. They didn't pressure. They played high safeties. They played low safeties. They played press corner. They played off corner. I mean, you saw the game. They did different things. Wasn't all the same thing. That's what they do.
Bill, in the first half, there was only one design run called. Was that part of the game plan, or just it kind of became a little bit of a shootout?
We had the ball three times in the first half. We took it downfield and scored three touchdowns every time. One of them got called back. So we were in a productive mode. We were moving the ball. We stayed with it.
Thank you.